Attack Zone, Episode 15, Gambler's Fallacy. Hello, Dice fans. You have stepped again into the Attack Zone, bringing you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. Each week, we're bringing you topics that we choose to put forward so that we can share our strengths for one another's improvement, and also bring attention to our weaknesses so that we can learn to address them. I am Dave, and joining me on the line once again is actual mad scientist JT. How are you this fine evening as we record, JT?
Doing well. Had a good day with the family. Went around doing some shopping and running some errands, and we left right after breakfast. Got home about, I don't know, 4:30, almost 5 o'clock. It was a big day. We wore out the kids. A lot of walking, but it was good. Beautiful weather, man. Oh. Beautiful.
Some days, just being able to wear out the kids is an accomplishment, right?
Yeah, it was good. You know, they're pretty well behaved, especially in public.
Yeah.
And today was just another really good day. A lot of fun.
I've met them. You've done well. They're all very polite and friendly. So, good stuff. Yeah, we had a weekend at the lake with some friends, which was fantastic. A lot of hiking, other things like that. Just some beautiful. Came back with some beautiful pictures and some good memories, and just a lot of fun. So that's awesome. Before we move forward, as we record this, we should say congrats, mega congrats to Stuart, who won his WizKids Open, and also Paul, who took top four. Both of them now have qualified for Nationals this year, which is fantastic. The first weekend of WKOs, they both got that buttoned up.
Yeah, I think we should say Paul at least top four.
At least top four. He's still playing as we record this.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. It's nice that the competitive season is upon us again, right?
It sure is. It really, really is. And we have a topic today that I think is geared towards some of that. It's something that I think a lot of us can fall into at various times. And I've certainly heard it discussed. Certainly heard some people fall into this trap. Sometimes I've fallen into this trap, but we'll get to that in just a little bit. Before that and before the six pack, I want to remind everybody, if you like this show, please do give us a review on iTunes. And I haven't actually figured out how to find the reviews on Google Play. I assume they exist, but I haven't figured it out yet. I don't use Google services a whole lot. We're listed on all those podcast directories. Reviews help others find it. We all do this through word of mouth. You guys are the way that people find us. So we'd love to give you props for a review here. We have nothing new this week, but we want to be able to shout you out. So please bring them on. We also have to again thank everyone for the outrageous support for our Patreon. We still actually have had a couple of subscribers trickling in here or there. That's amazing. Check out patreon.com/theattackzone for more info. It is completely tied to the care and feeding of the six pack. And every month we will draw a random backer to get, the rares and foils and super rares that we get in the six pack. Obviously, that could be a lot, that could be a little, but you have a shot at it. You'll be eligible for the giveaways, by the way, after the first of each month, because that's when Patreon charges you. So if you just subscribed in November, you'll be eligible when December hits, because you won't get charged until December 1st. And that's the only that's the point when you become a confirmed backer. All right. All the housekeeping out of the way. JT, we do have a six-pack here. This is all from the Green Arrow Flash set. A lot of great stuff to discuss in that set. It's such a full, rich set, right?
Oh, man, I love it. I love the introduction. I mean, we've talked about this before, but I love the introduction of crossover characters and having...
100%.
I love the fact that there's, you know, myriad ways to win. There's things that pair so well with BACs, so you can... the last draft I played in, actually, I got thumped by Junior, who we know from Detroit, and he had Superman that, while active once per turn, you can buy a basic action for two less, and he just kept buying anger issues, and it was a thumping. He had terrible rolls and still steamrolled me, because he was just able to when you're rolling three anger issues through your bag, eventually a couple of them will hit, and you just, it didn't matter what he was going to put them on. He's just going to attack and then wait to see what the math said to do. And but there's so many things like that that just, you know, that pair, and there's good strategies to put together, and it's an absolutely fun set to draft. I think that's not really up for debate.
I completely agree. I feel like draft in general is in a really good place right now. We just got some Uncanny X-Men stuff in at my store, and we fired off a draft with it because a lot of the guys there haven't played when that was a viable, or like the current draft format. And man, that was way more fun than I remembered. Maybe it's partly something having to do with Relentless not being there, because that global did impact the Uncanny X-Men draft. I mean, yeah, you had Professor X, and certainly a lot of the games were affected by that, but they were long, interactive, exciting games, back and forth. The best game I played, the guy was coming at me with some unblockables. With Namor, he had the Spider-Man that when attack, you choose an opposing character that can't block, and some other things. So he had me at this point where he's swinging in with 16 damage, and all my stuff is removed except for an Iceman, which also can't block. I'm at like 13 life. So I'm sitting there and I'm trying all these different scenarios. Wait, I transfer power like this and then magic missile that and that. No, wait. Okay, I do this and then I figured it out. If I transfer powered one of the 4-4 attackers to Iceman and then knocked out two of the sidekicks, I could survive with one. His board was clear. And then all I had to do was knock him down 4 life next turn. But just trying to figure that out in the end so I could not die and survive to do it. It was pretty incredible. Really, really fun game. So I think draft in general is great. My players were commenting on how they love the variety of draft, how different every set is. So our guys are still pumped about draft. Hopefully everybody else listening has that situation at their store too. Yeah. All right. So that's a lot of ado about a six pack. Let's dig in here. We start off with the common Clayface 5 mask Malleable Menace. At the beginning of your clear and draw step, you may replace Clayface's attack and defense with target character dies A and D until the end of turn. What do you think about Clayface?
Well, I don't like it. I think his stats are actually pretty decent for a 5 cost. Why would you want to switch him? I mean, if there's another, thumper on board, okay, fine, but level 3, he's a 7-5. Like, I just don't see what you're going to want to steal in place of that.
The only scenarios I can find where that's used for are edge cases. Like, you want to overcrush with him, and your opponent has a big, beefy blocker, so you switch stats and give him slightly less defense. I don't know.
Well,
I agree. It's edge.
It's just that he copies those stats, right?
He just replaces them. He doesn't even steal. Yeah, okay. Yeah, he doesn't even... Yeah, that's bad.
So
it's bad.
I mean, you wouldn't necessarily want that ability on a 2-cost character. I get it. I just don't know how you make it work on a 5-cost.
I don't either. I would say maybe mid late draft. He's a playable card just because he's 5 to purchase in House of Field cost of just 0-1-1. With fair stats on his second and third face. So maybe if you're just looking for some stats there, but nothing special happening. Next up is Felicity Smoke, the 2-bolt arrow member, a gray hat. When fielded, you may spin target character die up or down one level. Let's start with, obviously, big thing she has going for her is she's a 2-cost.
And 0-0-0 fielding.
Yes. Do you feel like she should have been an ally?
Well, maybe, but... I mean, maybe, but with the ability here, I mean, you can pair her with Adam and, you just cycle Adam for days. Cycle Adam's ability, I guess, for days. So, I like the ability. I don't know how much utility that spinning, opponent characters really has in this draft. In this set, that's one thing that I haven't played around with. But for a 2-cost shield, 0-0-0 fielding, you draft those because if you only draft characters that cost 5 or more, you end up in trouble.
big time trouble. And she, like you said, two costs, and she does work with Adam, and that's fair removal. So yeah, give it a shot if you know you have Adam. Not first pick by any means, but mid rounds of a like mid passing of a pack, perhaps.
Yep.
Especially if you know you have that Adam hanging out, not terrible at all. Zatanna, main attraction, a 3 fist mask mystic. While Zatanna is active, whenever you field a fist or mask character die, you may reroll one of your dice. If that character is fist and mask, you may instead reroll up to 2 of your dice.
So this is actually sneaky good.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It's one-sided parallax if you know what you're doing. So watch for it. 3 fist mask is maybe a little overcosted for the stats. She goes 011, 022, 133. But the ability is actually sneaky good for teams that have fist and mask characters, giving mm-hmm. you that one extra reroll on a die or potentially 2. That can mean all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Moving on, we have Captain Cold's Cold Gun, 2 Bolt Fist Snowy Schematics. Simply deal 2 damage to target character die. I like this. It's removal for some lower cost things. It's never going to be a first pick for me, though. Not that we've had anything necessarily first pickable yet.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
It's fine.
I don't think I've drafted it at all. It's one thing to draft cheap characters that can sit in the field and be blockers or cycle for energy or, you know, whatever. But to do that with action dice that I think have limited utility, that's a different story.
I did have it once, and it helped me. I had probably, I think, 3 Firestorms on the team, the common one, which is just some solid removal. And then I had this there, too. So pretty much at any time when I was attacking, I could reliably remove at least 4 things on my opponent's board. And in a lot of matches, that was enough to make the difference. So I think it has its uses. Certainly not as good as the uncommon or even the rare.
Yeah.
Next up. So a couple more commons. Deadshot Villains United, 4 Bolt Villain. Once per turn when fielded, choose Villain or Suicide Squad. All dice of that affiliation cost 1 less to purchase.
Yeah, so we've talked about him before. 012 yeah. fielding. I just don't think in draft that's going to cut it. Because it's a 1 fielded ability that you probably have to pay for. I don't see it. That's not going to be a strategy that I regularly pursue.
No, his stock hasn't moved up for me either. Black Adam, No Mercy, 4 Mask Villain. While Black Adam is active, when an attacking character dies KO'd, it goes to the used pile.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. What a tough control mechanic to play around if you're not prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is we've talked about this too before. You know, when you're playing the game, if you can make it more difficult for your opponent, that puts you ahead, right? And this can do that if they're not prepared to play around it. So you have to be
prepared.
Yeah, you have to be too. Exactly. But but this can do that if you're of the mindset to pull it off. So.
Jay Garrick, Leadfoot, the 4 Bolt Shield JSA member. The synergy, while he's active, when your opponent uses a global ability, you may pay Bolt Shield to cancel that ability. One-sided global, essentially, for you. That's like a counter spell, for all intents and purposes. Not a bad ability, but do you like it better than Black Adam? Probably not.
I don't. Although it is one to watch that, you know, depending on... It's not bad to have him on your team, depending on what you're facing, because sometimes being able to cancel a global is a big deal. So,
yes. Okay. So, we have our first foil, and it's in our uncommons. Right now, we're moving out of commons. We have Black Adam as the unquestioned leader here. Moving into the uncommons, we have Barry Allen, a foil card here. A 5-bolt fist, Central City Streak. Let's try saying that 3 times fast. Justice League. While Barry Allen is active, all of your other bolt and fist character dice get +1 attack. If a character die is fist and bolt, it gets +2 attack instead. And he fields 1/1/2, and his stats top out at 7/4 on his level 3 face.
So, I like it. It can be good. The common Barry Allen is better.
Mm-hmm.
It's not it being a foil is not going to change my pick. I'm still probably taking Black Adam.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, common Barry Allen is the synergy ability. You pay the fist and bolt to give a Barry Allen character die +2/+4 until end of turn. Yeah, probably more useful. I mean, I guess if you fill it up with fist and bolt characters, but then if you're going to start buffing attacks, you probably want to have Overcrush or some other removal as well. Potentially pair him with some of those firestorms. You attack, you clear out your opponent's field, and now that might be just enough extra attack to get the job done. But that's a tall order. A lot of people like to pick that firestorm.
Yeah, I feel like as much as you've talked about firestorm, we ought to see one coming here.
Unfortunately not. We're out of commons, and my favorite iteration of him, at least it's likely to affect drafts a ton, is common, though certainly he's not bad on any Firestorm iteration. But I do think we have a new leader here. We have the 7-fist Legion of Doom villain, Gorilla Grodd, Force of Mind. While he's active, all of your character dice gain Overcrush. While Gorilla Grodd is active, your other character dice also get +1 attack.
Yeah. No question about it.
Move over, Adam.
Yeah. He wins games. Grodd wins games. I mean, that's it.
We've even seen him creep over into the constructed meta. There was a team that we heard of at one of the WKOs today that was running Gorilla Grodd and our good friend Guy Gardner.
Yeah.
So he's out and about, folks.
Brutal.
He is. Mm-hmm. 4-bolt. Crime Syndicate Villain Power Ring, Curse of Volthoom. When fielded, if your opponent has no active villain character dice, Power Ring deals them 1 damage. Kind of like a lesser of that Magneto Hellfire Club from back in UXM.
Yeah, I like the common Power Ring better, and it's certainly not going to unseat Grodd, so...
You know, I think it is a playable card. It depends on what you see in the rainbow, I think. If they're... are for some reason not a ton of villains, though there's a fair amount of villains in this set. But if for some reason there aren't a ton, yeah, maybe. Plus, they have to be active, so if you have some removal too, you can maybe play around with that. It's chip damage. It could work, but it's not as good as other iterations.
Keep in mind, too, that if you're going to play this, it's a when fielded ability that has a restriction on a character whose fielding costs go 1/2/2. So,
that's a big, big point.
You know, it's chip damage, which is great,
yeah.
But it's not going to happen.
Oh, he's not unseating Grodd. No way, no how. He's not unplayable. He's just not great. Zatanna Hex Appeal, 4-fist mask, Mystic. Cross Pulse, when you purchase the die, add up to 2 sidekicks from your used pile to your prep area. So kind of an on-demand purchase Professor X.
Yeah, which is okay, except it's expensive for her stats. So, I mean, it's okay. But you've got to be able to time it to set up a big purchase and, you know, not end up clogging your bag by adding more dice to your used pile than you want to.
Yeah, and I think... So ramp is good, and resource management matters quite a lot. I don't know if I like my resource management being tied to Cross Pulse. I think a great use of Cross Pulse is something like the uncommon Jagaric. Where you purchase all of your character dice in the field zone, gain fast until end of turn. If your team is set to use that, he can really just be the icing on the cake, and that can really change the state of the game. Not just give you a couple of extra dice. Now, those draws might be critical, but you still have to roll them, whereas giving fast to everything in the field on demand is more a known quantity.
Yep.
That's the cross pulse I would go for. Finally, Captain Cold Elegance Egomaniac, 4-bolt villain. While Captain Cold is active, when you use an action die, he gets +1/+1 until end of turn. That's a pass.
Compared to Grodd, yes, but it depends on... Yes.
For a first pick, right.
Depends on... I mean, if you're open BACs and you're using Shocking Grasp Ramp, like, it's a when ability, not an if ability. So I can ping off your sidekicks, prep my Shocking Grasps, and pump all of my Captain Cold dice.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be pretty useful.
It can be, but you have to be in a position where that's going to matter. I think there are a lot of times you're going to say, hey, my Captain Cold dice are pumped, but I am not really in a position to do anything at all with them. At certain times, that can be meaningful, yes, but you're also going to have to be dealing with other stuff that's on the board. Now, if you could give them like fast and overcrush somehow, yeah, sure. But I don't know that that's something that I find too reliable.
Well, if you use it with anger issues, he's going to get +4 in overcrush.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
+4/+1. So, I mean, it's more usable than it looks at first blush.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Captain Cold wants to use action dice anyway. That's why we have the cold gun in this set. I mean, thematically, that's what it's pushing you towards regardless. But I think we end the six-pack with Gorilla Grodd, head and shoulders on top. We like Black Adam as well, and I don't think anything else was really all that close to them, do you?
Yeah, I don't think so. Unless my plan is to use action dice, then Captain Cold kind of joins the conversation.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
It's got, number one, it's got to be open BACs for me to even consider that, because then I'm going to try and look and see if I can get creative. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I 1A, 6A, and 6B, I think, are,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's Grodd, and then way down the list is everything else.
Sure. So we will add then the Barry Allen foil to the Rare Atrocitus from the last six pack, since we weren't able to do a giveaway with that one because it was before the first of the month. And we'll see what we pull in the next one for the giveaway for the month of November. Let's move into our feature topic. Today we want to talk about Gambler's Fallacy. And through that, we're going to talk a little bit about probability. JT, you like to talk a lot about playing the probability in this game, and it is incredibly vital because we are, in fact, using dice. But Gambler's Fallacy is something that I think a lot of people have fallen into this trap at times. And so what Gambler's Fallacy is, the idea is an individual would incorrectly, erroneously believe that a certain random event is less likely, or inversely, perhaps more likely, to follow an event or series of events. And this is incorrect because in the kind of events we're talking about, like, say, a coin flip, past events don't influence future events at all. Let's give an example in general. Let's go back to a coin flip. The odds of my flipping a coin and getting heads 5 times in a row before I flip the coin at all is 1 in 32. So if I've now flipped 4 heads in a row, somebody who's being impacted by Gambler's Fallacy might think that the next flip was less likely to be heads. They think, well, you know, I've already flipped 4 heads. It's got to be tails. But that's not true. It's 1 in 32 before I flipped anything. But at the point where I've already got 4 heads in a row, my next coin flip is still just 1/2, right? It doesn't change anything. What happened before has no influence whatsoever on what's going to happen again. Another place you see this a lot, when I worked as a cashier at a grocery store during college, I saw folks come in to play the lottery, and they had like their frequency tables and everything, like when did numbers last hit and what combinations and stuff like that, which makes you feel very educated in a way that you're approaching the random crazy storm that is the lottery, but it's actually hogwash.
It is. And so it's one thing to look at this. Like, I think my go-to here is probably roulette, because it is the ultimate gambler's fallacy. I play poker occasionally with some college buddies. We've been playing about once a quarter, twice a year, for 15 years. And some of these guys are a little bit degenerate. It's a lot of fun just to go. And there's, you know, goofy match the pot games. And, you know, you look at odds a lot. And these guys, one time they played black or red, where you take a guess and flip the top card for money. And it's kind of like roulette. Now at the casinos, you know, you have the zero, green zero, or sometimes green double zero, to give the house a little bit better odds than 50-50. But I had a buddy who one time went about 21 deep, which is absolutely astounding. To give you an idea, if he had bet $5 on roulette and done it 21 times and let it ride, he would have turned, and been correct, he would have turned $5 into a little under $10.5 million. And you know, we're there, and somebody was tracking it, like how many red, how many black, and you know, the deck of cards is only 52. So in this case, past performance directly affects the odds for future odds. But in your only to an extent. You know, only to through the 52 cards. So you know at some point, if Luke had lost track of how many times he had called red and how many times he had called black, it's basically still 50-50. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's important to be aware at any given time what your odds are for, in Dice Masters at least, rolling what you need.
Mm-hmm. And that's the key, and that's what we're getting into with this. But I want to bring up the point, too, that roulette, like, they try to play into it, right? Because generally at roulette boards, at roulette tables, they have, like, the big sign. It's, like, when things hit and how often and how long ago, or, like, what hit in the last,
exactly,
what is it, like, 15, 30 minutes. Yep. They try to play into that, but it has nothing to do with anything.
You're absolutely right. And that's the thing. You know, the sports books will do this, too. The Steelers are 15-1 in their last 16 against the spread at home on Sunday night games when they're playing an opponent with a losing record. You know, like, you know.
Actually, I will say that the Steelers tend to do very poorly when they're playing an opponent with a losing record. They tend to play down to the competition because they're stupid. But nonetheless,
well,
not the point.
That's just the point. So we talk about things, and it's, you know, we always want to try and have things in context. Sometimes putting things in context really reduces our overall understanding of what we're looking at. You know, if you're looking at context and giving too much credence to context, too much credibility to context, you really lose sight of what it is you're actually looking at.
Mm-hmm. And I think the way to approach this in Dice Masters then is obviously the role of the dice. And there are a lot of times I think that people talk about this, and it really comes back to results-oriented thinking. Man, that character that I really needed, that Gorilla Grodd came up energy like the last three times I pulled him out of the bag. He's got to come up character now. Well, no, there's still just a 50-50 shot that he'll be character or not. And if he doesn't come up character on the reroll, there's still just a 50-50 shot on the reroll. And if you had Parallax, there's still just a 50-50 shot. Any of the kind. Now, if you told me beforehand that, hey, what do you want to bet this guy is going to roll you know, 10 energy faces in a row on Gorilla Grodd, you know, that's one thing. But after it's already happened, it's a completely different situation. And I think people fall into that a lot when they're looking at what they want to roll and when they want to roll it.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is this is why it's so critical to be prepared to handle bad rolls. This is why it's so critical to know what to do when you don't get the thing that you want or expect, because it will happen. Like, mm-hmm. not getting the thing you want or expect will happen. It's dice. So, I think one of the biggest things to look at when you're rolling a limited number of dice and you have to deal with fielding costs is knowing, looking at the dice and knowing what to reroll and to give yourself the best chance to have energy to field the characters that you most want to field. And being able to deal with, you know, the 25% chance that you get the character face you don't want and the energy you don't want, you know?
Right.
So, I think math is really important. So, because most dice are three sides energy, three sides character or action, I don't think anything's not yet. So, rolling character side is 50-50. Rolling energy side is 50-50. If you count mm-hmm. the reroll, it's 75% to get whatever you want, because it's the first 50-50 plus 50-50 of what's left.
Well, but that's only before you've rolled anything. That,
right, again, yeah.
And that's where people get into trouble, because they think about that after they've rolled the first one.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And they think about that. Yeah. Increased percent, you know?
Yeah. So, right. And I am talking about before you roll anything. So that if you happen to roll double energy on a character that you were maybe kind of thinking about fielding that turn, that you can hold your horses and realize that things can get worse than double energy. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's, I talked to Stuart about an example in his game, one of his matches today, where, you know, he rolled and re-rolled, and because his opponent thought he was going to do something with all the energy he had, when he passed priority, his opponent passed back, and he just chose to just not do anything and force his opponent to waste a whole bunch of energy. So it was a situation where he had energy on faces that he didn't necessarily want to have energy, but because of that, he knew he'd be able to ramp the way he wanted to ramp, and he just basically skipped a turn because of what it did to his opponent. So knowing mm-hmm. knowing that things can get worse than double energy,
it's key.
It puts you in a position to make a choice on what odds to take and what odds not to. And anytime you're making that choice rather than the dice making that choice, or rather than your opponent making that choice, that's a big deal.
Right. When some may look at that as a punt, but when you can use it to set up your ramp, or especially when you can use it to disrupt your opponents, and even better, when you can set up your own ramp while disrupting your opponent's ability to do that with the dice,
yeah.
You can actually come out ahead. And you're right. There are worse things than two energy, like, for example, one energy. Or maybe you can afford to field it on two of its faces, but not the third one, and that third one comes up. So now there's actually, like, you know, two of six faces that are going to be less ideal for you to have rolled. And that's something you have to think about, too. It's not just, I want this. It's what can happen if I don't get this. It's considering all of the possibilities, not just the best case scenarios, but, as we've said before, the average case scenarios, too.
Well, and this becomes even more important with dice that have burst effects,
mm-hmm.
like Cold Gun. You know, you mentioned the uncommon and rare Cold Guns earlier, and because the burst effect is such a big deal on those particular dice, you've got to rework your odds and understand that before the roll and re-roll, you have roughly a 56% chance to get the face that you want, mm-hmm. or a face that you want. And it's not 75 because it's now only 2 of 6 faces instead of 3 of 6 faces. Mm-hmm. So it's 1/3 plus 1/3 of what's left, which works out to be, what, 5/9, I think. So you have basically 56%. Same thing comes when you're rolling four sidekicks,
mm-hmm.
right? Because those are 1 in 6 odds. Before the re-roll and re-roll, they're almost 1/3. They're basically 11 out of 36. So knowing that, entering into the roll and re-roll, knowing that is great, but you can't get caught between your roll and re-roll thinking of it in those terms. You've got to be willing to stop and consider what can happen and how does this get worse,
mm-hmm.
Depending on what I choose to re-roll.
Right. It's easy to think about, again, what could come up that helps you, but you have to be prepared for what comes up that doesn't.
How does this get worse is a question I ask myself a lot when I'm considering what to re-roll.
Why don't you give us an example?
So in a situation where I'm not convinced I'll have enough energy to buy... So back to playing a lot of Polymorph. In a situation where, you know, maybe I was playing against Oracle and my ramp was slowed and I wasn't sure that I would have the energy to buy the things that I wanted to buy, if I rolled Polymorph on an energy face and my opponent didn't have a character that I was sure I'd be able to poly out,
mm-hmm.
keeping poly on an energy face might be to my advantage if I'm not convinced I'll have the energy to buy something I want to poly in. Or if I didn't have a sidekick myself, that could also be problematic. So I tend to look at those opportunities for reroll and ask that question, considering mostly what do I not want to waste? if I'm forced to waste anything, what's the least problematic to waste? So is it an action die? Is it energy? Is it a character face I can't afford to feel?
Mm-hmm.
What is the least intrusive waste that I'm going to have to incur? So I think Polymorph, when I've only got maybe 5 dice to roll and maybe no sidekick already in the field, Polymorph coming up an energy face, I think is one that I'm just not sure that I necessarily want to reroll, unless I know exactly what I want to bring in,
mm-hmm.
or unless I know that my opponent has something I want to remove. Energy there is just something you got to consider sticking with, mm-hmm. because I've seen way too many people, and I've done it. You know, I've rerolled and then been like, I can't buy what I want. I can't poly it in. I can't, you know.
Right. And that's where, some elements of team building come into play as well. You know, when you think about these scenarios in the game, let's take Polymorph, for example, and you think about some of the ways that things can go worse for you and what you need to have when Polymorph comes up and so forth. One obvious thing that a lot of people like is that sidekick there. I can't always guarantee a sidekick. That's one face out of 6. But perhaps the ring from Faerun Under Siege can help me with that. Or perhaps the Star Labs Global can help me with that. So how do I... It's all a part of mitigating some of the randomness that we see. And that's just one case where that does things for you. Obviously, that's not going to help in every single case. But if we continue to look at Polymorph as an example there, that's one way to help get around having that difficult decision in your place. But then at the same time, what do you sacrifice by including Ring rather than some other card with some other ability? And that's where you have to balance that as well. So it really, it's not just about in-game strategy and thought process. It also can even go back to pre-event in team construction and elements like that.
I would say another like current meta example is Elf Thief. When, so say you're rolling three Elf Thieves, when it's already been named by Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
So you roll... You roll an Elf Thief and two double mask Elf Thieves. Man, I don't know that I re-roll any of them.
Mm-hmm.
I can still field the one for free. If I roll the other ones into character faces, they're going to cost me.
Yeah.
Whereas, so I could go from four energy to zero or negative. I could end up spending out of my other pool of energy. So, that's just one that I think... you know, you got to look at the situation, you got to look at the scenario and understand, you know, what, how does this get worse?
It does keep coming back to that, right?
What happens if I reroll this? What does that do to my turn? What does that do to my ability to pull off the things I want to pull off, right?
Right. And I'll say this too. This does not mean that we are advocating going for the opposite of the best case scenario, which is the worst case scenario. What we're trying to say is consider all of the possibilities and the fact that, to show my nerdiness, we have infinite diversity and infinite combinations rather than simply going with, oh man, I think this can happen. If this happens, this amazing thing happens, then I'm like set. Well, you might well be, but there's a lot more things that can happen than just that. And you must be prepared and you must be able to balance the risk and reward of rolling those dice. It's a push your luck aspect to this game as well. So many genres of board game contained within Dice Masters. We have the deck building. We have the card combat. We have the push your luck. We have the resource management. It's really pretty fascinating, actually. The deeper you dig, the more strategy that you find is present. Whereas one game like Can't Stop might be entirely about the push your luck mechanism, this integrates it with many other things. Certainly not the only game to do so, but a cool aspect nonetheless.
Yeah, and it's probably one of the reasons I love the game so much is that, you know, there's an opportunity to there's an opportunity to go through the stages of figuring out what what the odds are for opening moves as you start to build your team and try and set yourself up for success for those first couple turns, and then, you know, throughout the game, the same kind of thing as you roll and re-roll those new characters and what you've drawn. Like, what are your odds to draw something? We really haven't talked about that, but what are your bag odds? And I just think all of that kind of plays into and feeds part of why I love it. But you're right, there's just so many aspects of other different games that are kind of all balled into one here. I think for me, it's not always doom and gloom. How does this get worse? sometimes it is looking at them and looking at the dice and saying, well, you know, I need to roll that because if I get it, I win.
Right.
You know, like there are those times when that's the stage of the game you're in. So don't miss those just by asking the question, how does this get worse? That's no good either. But
well, and sometimes it's not just if I get it, I win. It's if I get it, I win, and if I don't do this now, I probably lose. We've talked many times about finding those ways to maximize your chances in the situation that you're in. You have to not just recognize when it's time to push it because it means you'll win. It's also, if I don't push it now, I'm going to be in a really bad spot and probably just behind. I'm the beat down, my opponent's the control, and we're really at the point where we're getting a little long in the game for me to stay viable with what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I there's another thing to be careful of, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what if you're the beatdown and you push your luck and your opponent's able to flip the tables? Like, there was the game that I played, Truby.
Well, wait, let's pause here real quick. Beatdown doesn't mean you have the advantage. It just means that you are in the aggro role. It doesn't mean that you are actually advantaged in any way, shape, or form. It just means that pursuing aggro is your best path to win.
Okay, then maybe that's the wrong term. But in the Swiss game at Nationals that I played Truby, mm-hmm. he had complete control of the game.
Yeah.
I couldn't do anything. And I don't remember what it was, but he spent energy that had he held, he probably would have stayed in complete control. And I happened to pull Cloud Kill out of my bag.
Mm-hmm.
And it completely flipped the tables. I went from way behind, like probably 20 to 10 behind, to, oh, I won the game on this turn.
Yep.
Like, it was so bad. And I mean, I still go back and I'm thinking, I probably would have made the same choice he did based on how many dice were going into my bag. And so sometimes it's a dice game. Sometimes the odds are just going to bite you. And that's why you got to be careful about results-oriented thinking. Like, I'm not sure he made the wrong call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, had he saved that energy, sure. You know, probably a different ball game. But that doesn't mean it was the wrong call to spend it. You know?
Right.
It worked out that way because dice happened.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he had all the answers to my team. And so, you know, I pulled the thing I needed to win.
Right.
So there's, and I think I even had to parallax at that turn. So there's, you know, I could have parallaxed all day and it'd been energy. I played a game at Canadian Nationals against a young kid. I think Adam was his name. And, you know, he was, if Adam or his dad listens to this, you know, he was a class act the whole weekend. He was classy when he won, classy when he lost. But the kid, I had named Elf Thief with my Constantine, and he pulled Spray. And he parallaxed the Dickens out of Spray until he got it, but then he had no energy to field Elf Thief for free.
Right.
And so, you know, you can't get tunnel visioned on something just to make it work, because you'll lose sight of something that ends up being more important. And I'm certainly not suggesting Truby did that. I do think Adam did that in that game, but it happens all too frequently, all too often. It's all too easy to do. I mean, anyone is in that situation, you know, in any given tournament.
No, I think Truby made the best call he could with the information that he had at the time. The draft game that I talked about earlier, just the other day, and I did ultimately end up winning that draft. It was some really fun games. I can't emphasize that enough. Chris, my opponent, was absolutely right to attack, because if he didn't, I was drawing some magic missiles and he was going to go down. He was at 4 health. I don't know if he saw, I certainly didn't see right away that I had a way out of it. It took me going through a lot of different things to figure out that I had it. I don't know if he thought it was like, oh, there's only one way out of this and there's so many ways that he can manipulate it. I don't think, you know, and there's just this one way that's going to do it. I don't think he's going to see it. Or maybe he didn't see it either, because it certainly took me a while to find it. And he was right to attack, though, because if I missed it, he wins. And I almost did. I was almost ready to say, good game, dude. And if I don't miss it, he loses. But even so, he only loses right then if I draw exactly what I need and roll it. And it wasn't hard to do, but I still had to do it. I still had to play it out in order to win. And there's always the chance that something doesn't draw or roll the way that you need it to. Yeah, you can make the calls that appear right. That doesn't mean that, you know, not going your way doesn't mean that they were wrong. And that's certainly a topic that we've talked about before and we will probably talk about many, many times to come.
Yep. Yeah, and you've got to be comfortable with the choices that you make. I think the biggest thing for me is if I can walk away from a game feeling like, you know what, I had a reason to make that choice. I feel good about that reason, even if it didn't work out the way I wanted it to.
Mm-hmm.
I feel good about my decision making process. Then, you know,
mm-hmm.
then I've made a win in that arena. Because there's plenty of times I walk away from a game that I lost that I feel like, man, I totally screwed that up. And that's not a situation you want to be in. You know, if you point to a mistake and it's like, I know better than that, that's not a situation I'll find myself in. But if I, you know, point to a loss and say, nope, I did what I practiced and knew I should do, I think you got to feel good about it.
Yeah, it's hard to complain there. All right. Well then, that brings us to the end of another episode of The Attack Zone. Thank you for listening. We know that you can spend your time in many, many different ways, and we're truly thankful that you spend it with us. If you like what we're doing here, please leave us a review on whatever podcatcher service you use. It helps us get the word out. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network. Theme music courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com. Promotional consideration is given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcasts, The Reserve Pool every Thursday, and The Prep Area, operating every Tuesday opposite of us. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and until then, keep rolling.
Cheers.
Join us every other Tuesday on The Attack Zone, where we cover the competitive aspects of Dice Masters. You too can learn how to evaluate new cards,
make up fictional alter egos from Latveria,
minimize mistakes,
tilt your opponent by calling a judge when they have lethal,
eliminate results-oriented thinking,
and win multiple national championships.
These topics and more every 2 weeks on The Attack Zone. We'll talk to you then.